The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Friday the 19th of April 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, I've been discussing news that the legal team representing high-powered insurers Lloyds and Arch have said that they have no obligation to pay out for the Nord Stream pipeline blasts because they were very likely carried out by a national government. If this is correct, as many believe, including Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, then it was an act of war. For this discussion, I was joined by Wyatt Reed from The Grey Zone, who broke the story this week. We had a really interesting conversation about the whole thing. We also discussed clean air policies that the Welsh Government is working on to bring in Wales. For that discussion, I was joined by Nicola Lund, who's a writer for The Conservative Woman. This is something that really, really does bother me. As I said in the first hour, I was in Bath last night. You have to pay if you haven't got an electric car or a certain kind of quality of emissions car to drive into Bath. But not only that, when you get into Bath and you want to park your car, you know, turn the engine off so that it's not emitting anything, you have to pay more if you've apparently got a more polluting car. Absolutely bonkers, some of these policies are. Now, the Welsh Labour Cabinet member, Leslie Griffiths, says that the biggest risk to human health is poor air quality, which is a statement that has echoes of the flawed messages put out by London's Mayor Sadiq Khan to justify ULEZ expansion and a whole host of other ridiculous, regressive policies. And these are regressive tax policies because they impact the poor more than you're rich. If you're rich, no problem. Go and pollute the world. The policies themselves make no sense. And this is putting aside the fact whether you believe CO2 is warming the climate or not. It doesn't matter. The policies themselves are unfair and they're ridiculous. So look out, Wales, because the Welsh Government is coming for your cars and also your wood burners. Yeah. Right. So if you did miss the first hour and you want to watch that, I do encourage you to, then head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. There you'll be able to watch all of my previous shows and listen back if you want. Today's first hour will be uploaded in the next few hours. Right. Coming up in the next hour, I will once again be discussing this week's news about the Nord Stream pipelines and the fact that they were blown up. And this week's news that the insurers have concluded that the blasts were committed by a government. My guest to discuss this news in detail is Emeritus Professor at the Peace Research Institute in Oslo, Norway. His name is Professor Ola Tunander. Ola is one of the foremost experts on intelligence operations of the Cold War. He's written and edited 12 books and numerous articles on the politics of security, naval strategy, submarine operations, geopolitics, psyops, and the Cold War history. And so I'm hoping that he'll be able to shed some more light on what is going on. I'll certainly be asking him what kind of operation this was. You know, I mean, could it have just been a private Ukrainian firm, as Western governments are now telling us? You know, what kind of kit do you need to do this, and what kind of intelligence and all that kind of stuff? Is it feasible that we believe that, as opposed to it being a national government with all the resources that they have? Then in the final segment of the Freeman Report for this week, in the second hour of the show, I'll be joined by actor, filmmaker and author Sean Stone, son of Oliver Stone, who starred in the film Ukraine on Fire. I'll be asking Sean about the state of the world, why he launched his own podcast, and his hopes and expectations for this year's US presidential elections that are due to take place in November. So a great second hour of the show to finish the week on, right here on the Freeman Report. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. And to finish off my commentary on this week's news, I want to say a few words about Nicola Sturgeon, the SNP, and the news that her husband, Peter Morrell, has been charged with embezzlement. Now, I won't go into the story itself, as our UK news correspondent Gemma Cooper will do that in a moment. But I would like to say a few words about the people that dictate how we should live our lives, like they have some sort of God-given right to do it. The SNP's former chief executive and husband of Nicola Sturgeon, who, of course, was the leader of the SNP, Peter Morrell, was at the heart of Scottish National Party. He'd been working within the party, for more than 20 years. And I therefore think it is safe to say that revelations he's been charged with embezzlement raise the question, what the hell is going on in Scotland, or what the hell has been going on in Scotland for some time? The SNP for years now has played politics with relations between England and Scotland in a drive to get an independence vote. And along the way has done immense damage to Scotland as a country and its relations within the United Kingdom. You know, only this last couple of weeks we've heard of this ridiculous hate speech law that's just been introduced. We've got a failing education system in Scotland. The NHS is on its knees. And then all these attempts to enable people to change their sex with little justification or medical oversight. The nonsense surrounding gender politics in general, such as news this week that schools in Scotland plan to enrol children as champions for the alphabet gang in schools. Absolutely ridiculous. And so, yes, I am absolutely delighted to watch the slow motion car crash taking place right before our eyes. The SNP, I think, has been poisonous influence in the UK. So let's just hope that this story runs and runs. And so to help this story along, I've just invited him, Brian Monteith. He's going to come on the show next week. He is a former MS in Scotland and a former MEP for Scotland. He's going to come on and talk about the SNP. We can't really talk too much detail about the case because it is an ongoing case. We can certainly talk about the implications for the SNP in Scotland and all the damage that they've done to the country. So something to look forward to next week on the Freeman Report. If you want to get in touch, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, please do by going over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right then, over to our fabulous news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Well, I mean, one of the biggest headlines today is, of course, the story about Nicola Sturgeon's husband, former First Minister Nicola Sturgeon of the Scottish National Party, being charged in connection with embezzlement of Scottish National Party funds. Within the last hour, Nicola Sturgeon has broken her silence. She spoke outside the couple's home just outside of Glasgow, and she said the situation had been incredibly difficult. And she can't say more than that because obviously the charges have been brought, so the case is active. But she was outside the house, she was speaking to press, and Humza Yousaf, now the First Minister and the leader of the Scottish National Party, said it was incredibly shocking to hear about the charges. So the party's broken its silence at the same time that Nicola Sturgeon has broken her silence on this one. Talking about money, one of the UK's biggest banks has been severely criticised today and been called anti-cash for saying it's going to limit the amount of cash that customers can deposit into their current accounts every year. Barclays said it's made the change to help it identify suspicious activity, but many people, many in the financial industry, and said this is an absolute attack on cash, and if one bank does it, other banks will follow suit. And I just brought this one in as a little funny. It crossed my eye earlier this morning. Basically, as somebody has said, that the Conservative Party is now in such crisis that even if Winston Churchill came back from the dead, even he couldn't save it. And guess who said that? Former UKIP leader and now honorary president of Reform UK, Nigel Farage. But I just thought I'd throw that one in at the end of the week and raise a little chuckle. It is Friday after all.
Yeah, and that is a bit of a cheeky comment from Mr. Farage, actually, because I think it's no surprise or no secret, sorry, that actually he would jump at the chance to lead the Conservatives. There have been rumours about that, as you know, Gemma. Whether it will happen or not, I don't know. But, you know, when you look at Farage and you look at his direction, he is doing more sort of aligning himself with the Conservatives or certain MPs within the Conservative Party, like Suella Braverman, Badenoch, and others in the Conservative Party, than he is actually with Richard Tice and the Reform Party. So maybe that's a hint. I mean, he was only, you know, he was over in Brussels this week with Suella Braverman speaking at an event there. And, you know, we've seen him lots over the past few months with Conservative MPs. So maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's the big plan that Farage has, actually, is to damage them with Reform UK. I think he probably realises, like I do, that it's unlikely they'll get anyone elected. But who knows? But if they do, it'll probably be only one or two or just a handful, very small number. But if he can just play that card, do that damage, the Tories then have got to have a whole, they've got a whole existential crisis. They're going to have to move to the right. And there the door opens for Mr. Farage to walk in. wouldn't that be a story?
Well, as we discussed earlier in the week, just talking about this, his odds are 20-1 to be the next leader of the Conservative Party. Same odds as David Cameron, who I still wage will be the next leader of the Conservative Party. I know. We've already disagreed on this, but he's got 20-1 odds, 20-1 odds, Nigel Farage to be the next leader. So anything's possible. He's a very clever politician. That strategy is perfectly possible. That's what, he's very Machiavellian, isn't he? So it could end up happening. But I just thought it was a nice comment today. Not even Winston Churchill coming back from the dead could save them now.
yes, but Nigel Farage might be able to. That's really interesting that he's got 20-1 odds. Like I said, I think this is a real thing. This is not just me clutching at straws. Farage has definitely been working on his public image. He obviously went in the jungle. I mean, he did earn a lot of money there as well. So maybe it was more about that. I don't know. I wouldn't have thought so, though, because he's turned it down for years. They've offered it for him continuously for many years now, and he's turned it down. I think actually there was a bigger plan involved. He's definitely preparing for something, but what it is, who knows? And of course, you know, we've got the general election coming up in the UK, and some are saying, well, you know, Farage should stand in that, but he can go off to America, earn loads of money there, build links with Trump. We've even heard, actually, I've heard rumours that if Trump gets back in, he might make Farage foreign office minister to the UK. That would be hilarious with a Labour government and Farage as the American. Because in America, unlike the UK, you don't have to go through the civil service. The president can appoint somebody. So that would be another turn up for the books, wouldn't it? Imagine that, a Labour government with Nigel Farage as the ambassador for the US.
Well, it would certainly give us plenty to talk about here at TNC. There'd be story after story after story. Yeah, definitely.
Can you imagine that? Can you just imagine that? Trump on the toilet every morning, back tweeting his outbursts with Nigel Farage as ambassador to the UK. Wouldn't that be a fantastic story?
Well, let's see. Maybe we'll have a bet on that as well, you and I, James.
maybe. Right, Gemma, thank you very much for all of your work this week and all the stories you brought to us. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll speak again on Monday.
Thank you.
Right. OK, I've got two fantastic guests coming up. So I've got Emeritus Professor. He's a professor at the Peace Research Institute in Oslo, Norway. His name is Ola Tunander. We're going to be talking all about those pipelines, the Nord Stream pipelines. But we're going to be talking about it in a bit more detail because he is an expert on operations, submarines, PSYOPs, also all sorts. So we're going to be lifting the lid, going a bit more detail under the blanket and trying to figure out what the hell is going on. So don't go anywhere. Stay right here with us on TNT.
TNT's Chris Smith.
The latest terror attack to occur in the world. And then an inexplicable violent attack on police at about 20 police vehicles as well by the very churchgoers who police had turned up to support. bizarre, but maybe not as bizarre as I'm about to explain to you. It is ghastly stuff. But do you not think that this is happening elsewhere? Do you not think that with 200 different cultures in a city like Sydney, that these kinds of hatreds, this kind of extremism, are you saying that that doesn't go on? That this is a one-off? I doubt whether you have actually grown up in the southwestern part of Sydney, as I have, because I'm telling you right now, as soon as 200 cultures got together about 25 to 30 years ago, it started.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
We don't rock. We talk. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, now we've already in the first hour been talking about their Nord Stream pipelines that were blown up. I did have in the first hour Wyatt Reed from the Grey Zone. We had a really interesting conversation about these insurers. My next guest, he has written 12 books and numerous articles on security, politics, naval strategy, submarine operations, geopolitics, psyops, and Cold War history. So I'm hoping that he's going to be able to lift the lid on a little bit more detail on what is going on. His name is Emeritus Professor Ola Tunanda. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Ola.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, Ola, tell us what is going on. What's your assessment of these Nord Stream pipelines? Obviously, that you know, we're being told that we should believe that a private firm out of Ukraine did this without the knowledge of Western governments. What do you make of it? What's your assessment?
So I think it's just nonsense that it should be a private act, some activist on the Ukraine side, for example. I mean, the debate now is about the insurance company and the Nord Stream company. The insurance company Lloyds or Lloyds Ark, they argue that it must be a government operation. It's a part of the Ukraine-Russia war. That's what they argue. And that means that they have to prove that, because there is no government has accepted responsibility. So they have to prove this case. And that would be interesting, because then comes the question, they have to prove if it would be Ukraine, they have to prove that it's actually on the top level of Ukraine, not just some individuals. And if it's United States, it's not so comfortable for many countries, in I would say, and it's clear that if you look at what Jens Stoltenberg said just after that happened, he said this is an attack on critical infrastructure. And when NATO had to respond to this kind of attacks, if it comes an attack on a pipeline or other critical infrastructure, it could become an Article 5 operation. So then comes the question, if NATO would mobilize against Ukraine.
That's an interesting question. But so what you're essentially saying is that we could have a court case where all this evidence is argued out. Now, would that happen in public, in the public view?
I don't know. But it's obviously Nord Stream company, Aktiengesellschaft, I think it's they would they argue that they have the right to some money from the insurance company, and the insurance company says that okay, for an individual or terrorist operation or something like that, we could pay, but according to the agreement, war is excluded, and an attack by a government is excluded.
It's not a small amount of money either, is it? I mean, these pipelines cost billions to make, and I think the amount that they're trying to claim from the insurers, I think it's about 300 to 400 million, because of course they wouldn't necessarily have the whole cost covered. So it's not a small amount of money, is it?
No, exactly. So that's clear. So that I think both sides want to at least go to some length to push their own position, and of course, if you go to the arguments by Seymour Hersh when he came up arguing that it was a planned by the top in the United States, it was Biden's decision, and it was President Biden's decision, and it was organized by National Security Advisor Sullivan, and they brought in different parties, and they had U.S. Navy deep sea divers that would should have supposedly planted the explosives already in June, and then they were triggered by a sonar buoy from a Poseidon aircraft, according to Seymour Hersh. And that's and what we know is that the days or nights before the explosion, actually a U.S. Poseidon aircraft passed back and forth over the Bornholm Island, over this South Baltic Sea. And the night of the explosion, another Poseidon aircraft went from Keflavik, Iceland. The first one actually came from Sigonella, Sicily, from Italy, and went up to a base in North Germany, and operated from that base over the Baltic Sea for 3 nights, actually. So that was a, and they could easily have dropped the sonar buoy to trigger the explosives. And they have a timer usually, and then you have the explosion, and and then you have this Poseidon aircraft that went from Keflavik, and it started 2 hours before the first explosion, and when it came to outside Norway, the explosion took place, and it arrived at Bornholm Island 1 hour after the explosion. And then they went around, patrolled the area of South Baltic for 5 hours, and then went back.
Yeah, so what you're describing there, because one of my questions to you was going to be, you know, what kind of military assets and intelligence and capability would you need to do something like this? Is it, you know, is it possible that a private firm could actually get away with doing that? And I guess the other question is as well, so have, you know, is this just the only sort of national governments would have the resources to do this, but also surely, you know, we've got satellites, there must be spying devices in the sea to do this without the Americans' knowledge. How likely is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the role of the Poseidon aircraft, which is a maritime patrol aircraft, it's clear, I mean, it's evidence to say that Americans are involved. You could say that the aircraft, the second Poseidon aircraft that went out up to the site of the explosion, it went there 1 hour after the explosion, but it was then refueled by a tanker aircraft. And this tanker aircraft left from Germany to Poland, and it left in the same minute as a explosion took place. And when you have certain pre-planning, you know that it's, you don't just send a tanker aircraft from 1 minute to the other, so to speak. So it was planned in beforehand, and it was refueled for an hour over Polish territory, and then it went out for 4 hours over the Baltic Sea, and in the very at 9 o'clock in the morning, it's for the last time it went over the site of the explosion at a low level, and then it climbed to 10,000 meter and back. And so immediately after passing the site, it climbed to 10,000 meter and back to Keflavik.
Yeah, so, I mean, based upon that, I think it's fairly clear that the Americans at a minimum were involved. Of course, Biden himself said that this pipeline is not going to supply Europe with gas as well. So, you know, he made that very, very clear months beforehand. So all the evidence points towards that. Now, we're going to take a quick break now, Ola, but when we come back, I'd like to hear your thoughts on, you know, let's just say that it becomes much, much clearer in the public arena anyway, that it was America that did this. I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you think Russia will do about this. Will they do anything, or are they just going to let this go? You know, what impact is that going to have? Because it's pretty serious. I mean, it's an act of war, isn't it? And I think many people have called it that, an act of war. And if it was the Americans that did it, you know, it's an act of war against Russia, essentially, Russian economic interests. So we're going to take a quick short break now. And when we come back, let's talk about that topic, Ola. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news.
Go.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Despite insisting it supports a two-state solution, the US has used its veto power to block a resolution calling for Palestine to be granted full membership in the United Nations. London and Washington have announced sweeping sanctions against Iran's military drone program in response to its retaliatory strikes against Israel. And over 160 Ukrainian children who were supposed to have been kidnapped by Russia have been found living in Germany.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Right, so Ola, I mean, all the conversation at the moment seems to be on who done it, whether it was America or not, but you know, there are implications, because I think if I don't know, let's just talk about the scenario that we do have this court case and it does come out that actually there's a lot of evidence that America did. You just discussed a lot of that evidence. What do you think Russia is going to have to say about this if it becomes in the public arena that America did this to and damaged Russia economically?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly will try to put some pressure on the Americans and ask, trying to get exactly what happened. I mean, they would ask for an international inquiry to find out, and then that would put United States in an awkward position, so to speak. Mm. But they will not just start a counterattack, so to speak.
Yeah,
I don't think so. But it will be it will be also difficult for the European countries, and not least for Germany, because Germany has actually been sacrificed in this case. They lost the German industrial, the whole German economy was relying on cheap Russian gas. And now they don't have it. And they have to buy this American LNG for several times the price. So it is a, so it's building up also kind of a dissatisfaction in Germany, because it's really costly, and the German companies has to close down.
So this course, is you know, and whilst the German government at the moment is not really saying much about this, I think German consumers, because their economy is being impacted, people are losing their jobs. We're talking about, energy supplies being tight and prices going up in the winter for ordinary Germans. I think the German public are going to be pretty upset if it becomes clear that this was America that did this. Now, tell us about this Swedish inquiry, Ola, and how that plays out in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, the two explosions, is one in the Danish economic zone and the other in the Swedish economic zone, but not in the territorial waters. And that is a tricky thing, and because you legally speaking, Sweden claimed jurisdiction for this area when the explosions happened. So it's a, and now they ended the inquiry they have and said, no, we found that we didn't have jurisdiction. So the actual consequences of this is that Sweden has cleaned up the crime scene. The Nord Stream company was not allowed to investigate. They could, for several months. So that means that they were not allowed to look at what happened to their own pipeline, because Sweden and Denmark really controlled the territory and took over a larger territory than they had jurisdiction for.
And Ola, who ultimately, obviously there's a company that owns the pipeline, they built it, but who ultimately owns that company? Who are the shareholders of that?
The Russians have 51% of the share, and then there is a German and some other European countries, but the headquarters is in Switzerland. But they were denied. They were denied to look at their own pipeline.
So Ola, if let's just say I don't know that the company did get this insurance payout, what we're saying here is like 51% of that would actually go to the Russians. Is that correct?
I guess so, yes.
Right, I mean, okay.
It goes to the company, because it's the company need money to replace what is destroyed and so on, the money doesn't go directly to the Russians, it goes to the company.
And is there then a plan to actually repair these pipelines then,
if there is a plan? Or
no, yeah, that's a question. So is there a plan in place to actually repair these pipelines?
I mean, I think they are thinking in these terms, but it will be an enormous lot of work to do it, because you have the pipes to some extent are rusty and so it is not so easy, but of course they will do what they can.
And of course, I'm assuming a little bit like if you have a really bad accident in your car, trying to get insurance afterwards again. If they are going to try and mend these pipes, they're going to have a problem getting somebody to insure them to do that. And so, yeah, it's very, very difficult to see how they could mend them, because if the implication is the US did this, presumably, if they try and repair it, it's just going to happen all over again.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be possible to repair it before the war is over, you could say. It has to be some kind of settlement of the hostilities.
Ola, listen, thank you for coming on the Freeman Report. We have run out of time now, but you're welcome back anytime. Thank you, Emeritus Professor Ola Tunander. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. I'm not quite sure. We were due to have Sean Stone on the Freeman Report. We're chasing it at the moment. So Sean, if you're watching this, pick up the phone and get yourself on over to TNT. But we'll definitely have a guest for you after the show, and we'll be talking about who knows what. So go make yourself a brew and then come back right here in a second on TNT.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
Internet crimes against children in New Mexico are real. And when it comes to protecting your children, the New Mexico AG's office and the ICAC unit are on the front lines. I'm New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas. There's nowhere to hide for online predators in New Mexico. We are working tirelessly using state-of-the-art technology and resources to seek out and find them wherever they are. Please talk to your children about the dangers that exist online, social media, games, and messenger apps. It's always important to know who you're talking to.
Help fight online predators in New Mexico by submitting a tip today.
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Well, my next guest, he must have been watching because he definitely responded. He's right. I'm looking at him now. He is the fabulous Sean Stone, actor, filmmaker and author. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, let's talk a little bit about your background. Obviously, you're an actor, you're a filmmaker, you're also an author, you're a podcaster now as well. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into doing all of the things you're doing at the moment.
It's a long story. How much time you got?
We've got plenty of time.
I grew up in the film world, acted a little bit in films like Wall Street and JFK and The Doors, but really I was just, you know, I had a mixture of film life and normal suburban Americana life. So I went to Princeton, studied history. At the same time, I took time away to do a documentary on making of Alexander, my dad's film, where I did the behind the scenes for, you know, back when the DVDs had all the behind the scenes featurettes and stuff. So I was doing those, and I really had a passion for storytelling since that time. History, I think, was a fascination of mine because that's where the stories are. Right? We study the past, we learn, and we learn all the great stories of the human condition. And so, yeah, I mean, over the past, I don't know, 20 years since college, it's been, different explorations, making films, documentaries, I did Conspiracy Theory, the TV show with Jesse Ventura. That led me to doing Buzzsaw, which was an interview program on YouTube, which got picked up by Gaia. I ended up on also on RT doing a news program with my co-hosts from Buzzsaw, Tyrell Ventura and Tabitha Wallace. We did a news program for RT for about 5 years. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of, my passion has always been, as I said, storytelling, trying to use media as a medium of shifting the narrative, right? Because I grew up with that outside the box way of seeing the world. And so I always understood the power of using media to shape consciousness, shift consciousness. And that's been very much the path that I've been on.
Yeah, thank you for that. And that's kind of what I wanted to get at, because it's clear that you're not just, you know, an actor that does any kind of film. You've actually got something to say, and you've definitely got, you know, like I said, something to say. I mean, what do you think of the state of the world at the moment?
It's been interesting. I mean, I'm pretty optimistic overall. I know that there are those who feel like we're on the brink of World War III, and certainly when Israel and Iran are, you know, lobbing missiles at each other, it can feel that way. I feel optimistic because the position that I was in, let's say even 12 years ago, when I was starting into some of the more mainstream conspiracy space, right? Like I was mentioning the show with Jesse and doing my program Buzzsaw, doing a lot of interviews and trying to influence and affect people to recognize the nature of the conspiracy realities, right? I would say, you know, since 2020 have really witnessed a great awakening in consciousness, in the ability to discuss and have suspicion, which is really the natural way that we should be towards government, towards big corporations, right? Towards things that, you know, that are beyond our power and influence, we should be suspicious. And so I think that's great to see that people are waking up to these various agendas. They're you know, whether it was during the COVID time, whether it's the WEF's Great Reset agenda, whether it's, you know, the nature of these kind of endless wars and, you know, sending billions and billions of dollars to foreign countries. It's like all these different things. I think really we've seen a shift in the last few years of people saying, all right, enough, we're tired of this, we're suspicious, we think that there's more to this agenda, that these conflicts are being created for really, you know, for purposes of profiteering, for control, you know, for even for depopulation is one of the other conspiracy theories that people are picking up on now, and even Elon Musk's talking about and such. So it's wonderful to see that that I think we're in a more awakened time, so that gives me optimism.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that optimistic message. But I guess countering that is, you know, we've seen awful things happen over the past 4 years with the COVID mandates for the jabs, people being locked in their homes. And now we've seen lots of people hurt by those policies, and loads of evidence. You know, we've got countless numbers of peer-reviewed papers in journals about the harms and all that. But Sean, nothing seems to change. What gives you optimism that something is going to change? Because our governments at the moment just seem to be ignoring us all.
Yeah, well, that's very true. The lack of accountability. You know, what changes then is hopefully people change, right? So it's like, okay, guess what? The government is not your ally. The government is not your servant, as it claims to be, right? The government is not even your friend, right? And so the more you recognize that, the more you have to make decisions accordingly. So that's why I say, to me, it's like awareness, consciousness, this is what changes things, because systems inevitably break down, systems inevitably transform and change. But what's going to guide that change, what's going to guide the next evolution? Because I mean, look, we're talking about, you know, this thing about emergency powers, you know, whether it was during COVID or whether it's been, you know, the post 9/11 era, the overreach of government. To me, it's like, well, the more government encroaches, the more it actually creates pushback, And so that's why I say it was so powerful to watch that, was to see people in 2020 and 21 all of a sudden realizing, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how much I had surrendered my power and my liberty to the government until they started telling you, you can't operate your business, right? You can't go outside without a mask. You have to get a vaccine to function, and, you know, or if you're a government employee, you know, you have to get it by mandate, or, you know, businesses trying to tell you, you have to get it to work. I mean, that's where you start to realize, wow, how much freedom, how much liberty have I surrendered? And that's going to shift, you know, again, how people respond in this coming age.
But does it not worry you? And I'm an optimist as well, but I'm kind of putting devil's advocate hat on. I do get very frustrated with the world on how people prefer convenience over freedom. People know that these big corporations are bad, that they're doing bad things around the world, but yet most people still shop using Amazon. They still walk around with smartphones, even though they know they're there just spying on them. How much hope do you have that people can actually change that kind of behavior? Because that's how the world's going to change, isn't it? People actually need to change their behavior. It's all very well becoming aware of these problems, but things need to change, don't they?
So that's where it gets to that line of like, how can we basically assimilate healthier modalities, right? More holistic modalities into the modern world, whether it's the modern economics, whether it's technology, right? And I really, you know, I try to see, like, look at things as balance, because, you know, in some senses, we want, and, you know, we want the amenities, we want the technologies, we want the conveniences. Of course, that's like you said, that's the human instinct, is, you know, we are, you know, we don't want to have to go out there and hunt for our food and grow our own crops. I mean, it will, you know, if we do have to do that, it will completely shift the nature of what's available to us, the amount of time that we can allocate to things. So, you know, there is a balance, I think, in terms of how you navigate, you know, in terms of choosing your fights, right? So, you know, when you talk about health, for example, well, certainly, I mean, the GMO fight, I think, is a very worthy one. The fact that we are being poisoned by, whether it's genetic modification of our food, the poisons that they spray, and the glyphosates and other things that they're essentially contaminating in our food supply, and it's affecting obviously our bodies and such. You know, those are important battles to fight and to try to, you know, resist. When it comes to things like Amazon, yeah, I mean, look, Bezos is very, very dangerous. I think you have to look at his, you know, the fact that he obviously is Washington Post. What's the Washington Post agenda, right? What's the influence? What's the agenda that they're pushing? At the same time, the infrastructure that Amazon has created, I think, is a powerful tool that we can utilize. And again, I believe it's like, you can take, if you shift consciousness, you can take infrastructure of the things, the technologies that have been created, the infrastructures that have been created, and we can use it for more beneficial purposes, just like the military industrial complex. I did a documentary called Century of War a few years ago, and it's like John Perkins, the economic hitman, was talking about, like, you've got this infrastructure for war. If you shifted it and said, we want it for peace, we could clean up the rivers, the lakes, the water supplies, the oceans. We could clean up the earth in a way that would make it healthier for us to be able to drink our water, you know, to not have to use all these decontaminants and filters and things, right, to be able to drink water. I mean, it's like, you could do so many things to actually clean up the earth if you deployed that same infrastructure that we've created for war and for control and death, and actually used it for life.
Yeah. I am an optimist, but I think, that things are going to have to get a whole lot worse before people start putting down their phones and actually start thinking that they've got it. Well, I think people realize that we've got to change, right? I think most people realize that, but knowing that we've got to change and actually doing it are two different things. And I think things are going to have to get a lot worse. But anyway, let's move on, because it's a big year for America, isn't it? You've got the presidential elections this year in America. What do you think is going to happen this year? Because it's not totally clear at the moment. It looks like Trump, he's headed in the polls. It looks like it's a dead cert. But then, you know, he's in court in this criminal case. Lots of things can happen. What do you think is going to happen this year?
Well, I mean, look what happened in 2020, right? It's like they will use whatever they can to keep Trump out of, you know, out of that position of you know, the presidency. I think that we are going to see big surprises. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see kinetic, you know, false flags. I wouldn't be shocked to see escalation in the Middle East. I wouldn't be shocked to see financial turmoil or anything that can basically justify, you know, even suspension of elections or some kind of transition away from the old system. Again, I mean, I'm someone that's very much looking at this as two major factions that are vying for influence. You could call white hat, black hat kind of thing, war going on. And actually, I don't think the black hats are really in power anymore. I think that they've shown their cards. They're doing their best, but I don't think that they have the spiritual authority to really do what they wanted to do. And so a lot of things I think are being done for effect. A lot of things are, you know, yes, there's still things like Maui fires and stuff like that, which are abhorrent, that are being done, but it's like they don't have the power to do what they really want to do. I don't think they have the power to really drive to like a World War III scenario end game that they would love to create. So I don't know. I'm fundamentally feeling that we're in for a roller coaster and some big transitions here. I don't even know. Again, I don't even know that there'll be an election. So I just stay like, you know, I stay optimistic and I stay, you know, interested in seeing how things unfold.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think, you know, what have we got? We've got 9 months until the elections now, I think, in America. That's a hell of a long time, given all of the plates that are spinning at the moment. I mean, one question that I do ask all of my US guests is, looking from the UK, the fact that Joe Biden is president just seems absolutely ridiculous at the moment, given his performance, his inability to speak to camera. You know, despite all of this going on in the Middle East, we never actually hear Joe Biden's words because they daren't put him in front of the camera. And of course, this election is not just a competition. This is about the next 4 years. So if he's like that already, it just seems absolutely ridiculous that the Democrats are proposing putting Joe Biden up for another 4 years. We have got that Democratic convention in August. They have changed the rules now, which means they could change candidate if they wanted to. Do you think they're mad enough that they will actually, assuming that the election goes ahead, that they will really put Joe Biden up?
Yeah, I mean, people are speculating that they're going to pull him. It's, you know, it's pretty shocking that, you know, you see the polls, and I don't know what polls mean. I mean, Clinton was, you know, trouncing Trump, and, you know, and likewise Biden, I think, was, you know, leading Trump in the polls, and, you know, in 2020. And it was just like, you know, they're just, it makes you really wonder how legitimate any of those polls are. But the fact that there's still this many, like, let's say a third of Americans that still support Biden just shows you, like, people don't really care that the guy is clearly checked out and not running the government. I mean, they run on this. The left has become like, I call it, like, they talk about like hate, but they're projecting, like, they hate. They are just a party of hate. All that they do is they run on hatred. Hate Trump, you know, hey, the immigration problem, you know, the border's in crisis. Oh yeah, it's Trump's fault. You know, it's like, that's all that they can say. They really are just, I mean, what did Biden even do in his State of the Union? It was mostly, you know, blame Trump, and Trump did this, Trump did that. It's like, you're running on hatred. That's what I see the left. So they don't really, it's not that they love Joe Biden. How can you like Joe Biden? You know, the guy has literally been a horrible, he was as a senator, he was a neocon. I mean, he's a horrible person, but he's just, it's all hatred.
Yeah, Sean, we're nearly out of time. We've got just over a minute left. Tell us what you're working on next.
I can't really divulge the next projects just yet because they're still under wraps, but we can talk about the docuseries I put out called Best Kept Secret, which is really powerful. If you want to get like a red pill experience of how I call the dark elite, the cabal, you know, how they rule mankind. I think that's a must watch. And people should just check out my website, seanstone.info, for more information.
Fantastic. Listen, thank you for joining me on the Freeman Report today. I love your work. The fantastic Sean Stone, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Sean.
Of course, thank you.
Right, okay, that's it for this week. Well, for me anyway, not for TNT though. We've got more great shows coming up this afternoon. I'll be back on Monday to do it all again, so make sure you join me then. But in the meantime, please enjoy more of our great shows right here on TNT.